We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good morning. Welcome to WTIC News Talk 1080. This is George Colley, fill-in guest host broadcaster here for this week. Got Maddie Sirois producing. Going to probably hold off on the singing a little bit today, but, you know, I'll play the hits. What do you guys request? I got some new verses. We'll wait for the time to come for anybody who was listening in yesterday. I apologize for that. Anybody who sat through it, thank you. We got a bunch to talk about today. 860-522-9842. That's the number. Going to want to hear from you on these things. First thing, we'll get into this more a little bit later. I don't know if you saw this guidance from the CDC, revised guidance issued on Monday. It is possible for people to be infected through contact with contaminated surfaces or objects, but the risk is generally considered to be low, the new CDC guidance says. Estimated that the chance of contracting the coronavirus through surface transmission, through touching something, the chance of contracting the coronavirus through surface transmission is lower than 1 in 10,000. So, thinking about things to talk about today, if you have a business that has been spending thousands and thousands of dollars a week sanitizing the whole place, if you're a school district, how much money have you spent on sanitizing every single day? Yeah, CDC is telling us now. 13 months later, doesn't really matter. This is why we question everything, folks. This is why you got to question everything. Be skeptical of everything. You know, we've known for a while now. The reason why you wear the masks is because that's how this thing spreads. The shutdowns, the restrictions, the, you know, power grabs here by different governments. Wear a mask. It won't spread. And then let businesses open up and do their thing. Let people decide if they want to go out, where they want to go, and what they want to do. We're going to get to that a little bit later. But first today, you guys been following this Ron DeSantis 60 Minutes story? I think of one of the first things I said, one of my first times on air here on the radio, is I told you, dream job for me, 60 Minutes. You know, I think of, you know, Dan Rather in a turban in the Afghan mountains. Looks like his source at the time may have been Charlie Wilson. Remember that movie, Charlie Wilson's War? You know, reporting on the war in Afghanistan. You know, 60 Minutes. So 60 Minutes is somebody I've always trusted and will continue to trust. We'll see what happens here with this story as it keeps going. But this is what the 60 Minutes story was. Now, this is from CNN and the backlash that 60 Minutes is now getting, not only from Ron DeSantis or his office, which you'd expect, but also from the supermarket chain Publix, as well as elected Democrats in Florida. The story of 60 Minutes was about Florida's vaccine rollout. And it's spotlighted a recent $100,000 donation that Publix made to DeSantis' reelection bid. The story suggested there was a possible link between the donation and the state's partnership with Publix stores for vaccine distribution. Again, it suggested that there was a possible link between the donation of $100,000 from Publix to DeSantis' reelection bid and the state's partnership with Publix for a vaccine distribution. I'm not going to get into all the questions here. I'm not going to get into necessarily how the story was reported. What I'm going to get into is that was the story that 60 Minutes put on national television for the most respected television show I believe, news television show in history. I got a story pitch for 60 Minutes if they think the $100,000 donation to DeSantis' reelection bid is a story. I've got a pitch you may want to think about. Let's just throw on our hypothetical hats and let's just think about this. Let's say that Ron DeSantis' wife manages, founded a very successful venture capital firm investing in healthcare technology, financial technology. Let's just imagine that that's Ron DeSantis' wife. Now, let's imagine that as COVID happens within the first month, when the whole world doesn't know what's going on, and it's Florida that's in the middle of the horrible first wave with no mask, with no PPE. You're still 6 weeks away from any mask or PPE coming in. And let's say, 60 Minutes, that Ron DeSantis signed an executive order to waive the bidding requirements for testing nursing homes, for testing nursing home patients and staffs, assisted living center patients and staffs, state employees, schools, colleges, the students coming back to UConn. Let's say that this was all in Florida and that was all happening in Florida. And that Ron DeSantis gave a no-bid contract, one of only four contracts given for testing, to a company connected to his wife's venture capital firm and also to the former company of his chief operating officer. Let's just imagine that Ron DeSantis' wife and Ron DeSantis' COO of the state of Florida were connected to a company that had never done any sort of testing for COVID, obviously. Nobody had. But let's just say that Ron DeSantis gave, or that the state of Florida gave that company connected to the governor's wife and his COO a no-bid contract to do millions of dollars worth of testing with nobody else bidding for that contract. And let's say that now, over the last 2 years, let's say fiscal year 2019, 2020, 2021, that that company connected to Ron DeSantis' wife and his COO got more than $34 million in checks from the state of Florida. Not a $100,000 donation to the reelection bid. They got $34 million, more than that. 60 Minutes, would that be a story? Now, maybe it's not a story for 60 Minutes, but CT Mirror, would that be a story? WTNH, would that be a story? CT Capital Report, is that a story you would post about? Or ask about? Or talk about? Would that get clicks for your digital teams? Would that be a question you'd want to ask about? Is that a story that you would follow aggressively? 60 Minutes, the most trusted news magazine in the country. $100,000 donation that Publix made to DeSantis and trying to tie it all together to Publix doing vaccine rollouts. Which, by the way, grocery stores and pharmacies, I mean, that's happening all over the country. And Publix is on every corner in Florida, except for this one place where it's 30 miles away from one town. But I mean, for the most part, when you look at the whole state of Florida, Publix is everywhere. Would that be a story? Because, you know, how many times would Governor Ned Lamont be asked that question about DeSantis' wife in a press briefing? How come he's not being asked when he's doing it? Somebody call in and defend the governor, who would be the first person to do it in 6 weeks. Somebody can tweet at me and defend the governor here, who would be the first defense of the governor in 6 weeks of bringing this up. Can anybody give me an answer so I'll shut up about this? Because until I get an answer, I'm just going to get louder. We'll be back after this. Welcome back, WTIC News Talk 1080. George Colley, fill-in guest broadcaster today. Looking forward to hearing from some of you call-in broadcasters, 860-522-9842. talking about this DeSantis 60-minute story and asking some questions about it in relation to what's happening here in Connecticut. So let me kind of carry on from what I had said there in that first segment. So would it be a story if Ron DeSantis or his wife, if Ron DeSantis' wife had a venture capital firm that heavily invested, well, we don't know how heavy because they're not telling us, but was one of the first five investors in a company that's now going public for billions of dollars. Right? I mean, they're going public, they're a SPAC, CM Life Science, merging here with Sema4, buying it, going public here. I want to say they're estimating about a $2 billion valuation. Looking at the stocks, from what I can see, it's gone up from there right now for when this may, whenever it does go public. So let's say it's now going public for billions. And there's actually, and let's say Ron DeSantis and his wife, that they've actually had like an advisory opinion from the state ethics office in Florida as to how to deal with any potential conflicts of interest. And that Ron DeSantis's wife's venture capital firm invested in this company, Sema4 in this example. I mean, they invested in them while he was in office. That was in 2019 when Oak HCFT invested in Sema4. So it was after they took office, after they did the advisory opinion. One of the rules that it said is, look, you guys cannot be involved. This is in the ethics office. You know, you can't be involved in anything that, you know, your wife's firm can financially benefit from. You got to make sure that we have a list of everybody, recusal list that you guys are going to have to stay away from any company. Make sure there's no state contracts. Make sure you're not pushing for any legislation. You're not pushing for them to make any money. Let's say that was the arrangement. Then COVID happens. And while it's not just your wife's venture capital firm that's invested in this testing company, it's also the state's public quasi-venture capital arm. That's Connecticut Innovations through the Department of Economic Community Development. They were one of the first five investors in this as well. So let's say the guy from CT Innovations talks to the guy who has the testing company, and they put you in touch with the COO in the governor's office, who already had a prior relationship with that testing company when he was the CEO of a healthcare technology related company before starting here in the public government. So they're connected in the past. Right? This isn't like, hey, we heard about this company here in the state, they can do this. I mean, they teamed up in the past. Sema4 and Core Informatics. Core Informatics then became Thermo Fisher Scientific. And this has all happened in 2017, 2018, just before the election, leading into the election. And now all of a sudden COVID happens. And through executive orders, the governor is basically the only one in charge of anything. And so his COO, who had the prior relationship with the testing company, gets a call from Connecticut Innovations, who also has money invested in that testing company. And within 24 hours, according to a press release from Connecticut Innovations, that COO, Josh Gabal, connects Sema4 with his contacts at the Department of Public Health. And within 10 days, that testing company that Josh's former company had been involved with, that the governor, the first lady's venture capital firm is involved with, got them all the licensing, all the compliant labs, everything they need to all of a sudden do thousands of tests a day to test all the state employees, to test all the nursing homes, to test all the assisted living centers, to test teachers and schools. Now, we don't know how many tests they did because they're not telling us. We don't know how much they're paying for each test because they're not telling us. But federal money, state money, we know that it's been more than $34 million that's gone to that one company in the last couple of years through grants from DECD and through Connecticut Innovations and through whatever money's coming from whatever here for COVID. So let's say all that went on in Florida. That when the Sema4 company puts out a press release on April 6th, talking about the partnership with the state and how they're going to be able to do thousands of tests a day, which was needed. I'm not saying it wasn't needed. It was needed. Let's just say that that's what it was. That it took 6 more weeks for the governor's office to notify the state ethics office that, hey, this company that the governor's wife's involved in, yeah, they got this thing, this contract. I know that we're supposed to tell you from that agreement, so we're letting you know. You know, it's through the state comptroller's office, so don't look at us. And any money that she makes, we're going to give to charity when this company goes public. Someday, maybe. Let's say that was Florida. Would that be a story for 60 Minutes? Would there be questions for the ethics office as to why the governor's office didn't check in to see if this was a kosher deal? They just told them this happened, and yeah, we're going to give the money to charity. This was before they knew it was going public. This was last May when that happened. And that the state ethics office response wasn't like, why didn't you tell us ahead of time? Wasn't like, oh, we should look into this. The state ethics office response was, you don't need to give the money to charity. You know that, right? That's not binding. It wasn't like, oh, wait a minute. What's the deal with this contract? How much they getting? How many tests they doing? Have they ever done it before? Do the tests work? How long is the contract for? For how much money? That wasn't the question. It was, you do not need to give the charity any of the money that you make on this. That was the ethics office response. Would that be a story for 60 Minutes? Maybe my journalism DAR is off. Maybe it's the COVID brain fog. But that sounds like the type of story for 60 Minutes. Or for somebody. At least maybe for the local patch. Somebody in Connecticut. I don't know. Maybe not, though. What do I know? We'll be back after this with Bob Stefanowski. Welcome back. WTIC News Talk 1080. This is George Colley. Filling in this week. Madison Royce is producing. We've got our regular 9:35 on Tuesday call with former 2018 GOP gubernatorial candidate, former business executive at GE and UBS, Bob Stefanowski. Bob, thanks for calling in.
Good morning, George. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate it. You know, I got a bunch of stuff that we've been throwing out here today and over the last week. I guess the first thing is, and I know sometimes it's tough when you know, as far as going, you know, going against the candidates that you ran against, wife, right? I mean, that isn't something that you do. But when you hear that we're still not getting any of these answers as to what the deal is with this testing company, Sema4, and how they got these contracts and how much money may have been spent and how many tests they may have done, I mean, can you believe that they're not clearing this up and that nobody's really calling up to kind of defend it or tell me where I'm wrong or, you know, tell us, you know, that there's nothing to see here?
Well, you think about, and I guess there's some unclarity as to what the real facts are, but you think about the 60 Minutes story on DeSantis, how, you know, Publix supposedly gave a campaign donation, and that resulted in them getting preferred access on vaccines. If you think about, allegedly, what the Lamont administration did, it's worse. They gave money, you know, to a company that his wife and family has an equity interest in. They didn't disclose it. He used his executive authority to do it on no-bid basis. And then when people finally found it, only at that point did the governor say, well, we'll give the proceeds to charity. I mean, that's infinitely worse than what supposedly happened down in Florida. And the fact that other than you and Todd Feinberg and a couple others are asking the questions, and to make it worse, George, the fact that the Lamont administration refuses to respond, to me, is a bigger, that should have been on 60 Minutes, not what's going on in Florida.
It seems to me, I mean, like I said, 60 Minutes is dream job, I think, for a lot of investigative reporters. I had an interview at the 60 Minutes offices one time. Laura Logan was there. Bob Simon, I met in the office. It was for a producer gig. Let me tell you, it's a pretty intimidating and cool office to be. I mean, that's where journalism has been made over the last 50 years. When you walk in, they got pictures of, you know, of Wallace and, you know, of Schaefer and, you know, interviewing Arafat or interviewing Mandela when he, you know, soon after he got out of prison. I mean, they're the stories of our time. And maybe this $100,000 donation to Publix is a big deal. And it may be. I guess we got to see what it runs out. But man, $34 million to this company that's now going public, that seems like a big story too.
Right. It's not even close, the facts. It's 100,000 versus 34 million. It's a campaign donation versus a direct contribution to an equity to a company that you own equity in. Yeah. It's a publicly disclosed contract versus one done under executive authority that was never disclosed. I mean, if the facts about the Connecticut incident and Semaphore are true, it's infinitely worse than what happened down in Florida.
I mean,
and nobody's answering the questions.
I mean, and Publix, if anybody's been down in Florida, knows. I mean, Publixes are everywhere. I mean, they're CVS, right. They're Dunkin' Donuts up here. I mean, they are on every corner in a lot of parts of that state. Multiple Publixes in the same towns.
You're not asking for a lot. All you're asking for is for the administration to answer your question.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a lot to ask, especially when the $34 million that was paid to Semaphore is state taxpayer money. It's our money.
Yes.
And we can't get answers as to how it was spent or why it was spent that. I'm sorry to get agitated, but it's disgusting. Yep. It's our money. We're asking, why did you make the decision that you did to give it to your wife's company? And they refuse to answer. There should be hundreds of thousands of people circling the Capitol right now saying, we want an answer to this. $34 million is a lot of money.
I wanted to ask you this question, Bob, as I've kind of watched these press briefings and the questions aren't asked. How many times would you guess during your campaign, because I was there for a lot of them, how many times were you asked for specific details on how you were going to eliminate, the state income tax? I mean, how many times in one press briefing would you be asked the same question?
I mean, George, it's easy to complain, right? But if I got to believe whether it was me or somebody else on the Republican side who was governor right now, I got to believe the questions would be a lot harder. Now, in fairness, a campaign is more, George, you're a reporter. You can be a lot tougher in a campaign. And when you win the governorship, you got to show a level of respect. I get that. And you don't want to lose access to the governor. Mm-hmm. But at least you could politely ask the question, George. That's what gets me. You don't need to go after them like they went after me on the campaign trail, but you owe it to the public. It's the public's money. It's being spent up there. And I've never been a reporter, George. You're infinitely better to comment on this. But to me, it's their responsibility to get an answer to this question.
I agree with that. I mean, and here's the thing. There may be an answer that is just fine and dandy for all of us to live with. I mean, I'm not even saying, at this point, I'm not saying necessarily that it's criminal. I'm not saying that, it's just what is the answer? And the fact that they keep that nobody's asking it and that nobody's defending it. I mean, that's usually what I get. I mean, well, as you write one op-ed and you've got the entire Democratic establishment coming after you. I've been doing this for six weeks.
Right. I made a passing criticism of the Hartford Current and I was, social media was going nuts for 4 weeks about how I hate Hartford. And I was criticizing the leadership of Hartford. And I'm actually standing up for the people of Hartford. It's the leadership. But And George, then they give you the answer, well, Governor Lamont didn't appoint Semaphore, the comptroller Lembo did. Well, that's nonsense, too, because it's his wife's company. Of course he knows that Semaphore was given that contract. So, you get a kind of a made-up answer. On this thing, they owe an honest answer to the people of Connecticut. And to your point, George, if it's a realistic, logical decision, you move on. That's it.
And here's the thing is if they're trying to say that on May 20th or May 21st, when the governor's office, their lawyers contacted the ethics office and said, just so you know, this contract was given through the state comptroller's office. And I'll read this whole thing later on again for people. It was on May 20th or May 21st that the governor's office notified the state ethics office that they had this contract. But Josh Gabal, from what we saw from the Connecticut Innovations press release, was the one who got connected to the guy, the CEO from Semaphore, through Connecticut Innovations, and within 10 days got them all the licensing. And then on April 6th, 6 weeks before they notified ethics, there was a press release with Josh Gabal in it and the CEO of Semaphore talking about the partnership. So the governor's office did not just find out about the comptroller's office. It was Josh who ran through hoops, from what Connecticut Innovation says, and put him with his contacts at DPH, which is in the governor's office, through the governor's administration on the executive branch, and that they're the ones who got them compliant and got them the lab certifications and everything else. So they were intricately involved, the governor's office, his COO, Josh Gabal, and Giffords were intricately involved in getting this company the licensing.
And you know what gets people, George, is the double standard. It's that, and it's hiring the PR firm from a Democratic operative. And it's the vaccine, information program where they're paying another $20 million to the the same company that ran Attorney General Tong's campaign and part of Lamont's campaign. And what's happening is the people in Hartford play by one set of rules, and everybody else has to play by the real rules. And what they're doing is, in a time of crisis, in a time when people are vulnerable, they're lining the pockets of all of these Democratic operatives, and they're using our money to do it, and they're taking advantage of the people at the time that they shouldn't be doing it, George. Yep. And it's not right. And I give you credit and your listeners credit for pointing it out, and we got to keep yelling it from the rooftops.
And I just think, and here it's I want to make it very clear that there is nothing wrong, in my opinion, with Mrs. Lamont having a kick butt venture capital firm. I mean, I think that that's great, especially if they're investing in Connecticut companies and trying to help, you know, Connecticut businesses thrive. That's great. That's what venture capital firms do. But when they're using the executive orders of her husband in order to advance this company, which is going public as a SPAC for billions of dollars in the next couple of weeks, it just doesn't pass the smell test.
George, I'm with you. I don't have any problem with anybody making money, but when you're using taxpayer money to do it, and we don't know about it until, you know, people uncover it, and then he's going to probably use those gains to fund his campaign to run for office again in a couple of years. It just stinks. Yeah. And it's a different set of rules again, George. And you would hope that our elected officials would be even more pure on the rules than people are, you know, because there are officials up there, but they don't care, George, and they get away with it. And it's a one-day story, and it goes away. So I give you credit for staying on it. And I'm hoping the 60 Minutes thing with Florida kind of gets people interested in it again, because it's much less worse what happened down in Florida. And I stress allegedly, it's a lot worse than what allegedly happened up here. Yes. But answer the questions. If it's not true, answer the questions.
I agree, but I'm going to go to break here. Do you have time to hold on for the segment?
Absolutely.
Or do you have to run?
All right,
we're back with Bob Stefanowski. I'm going to take slower sips of my coffee here, Bob. This is George Colley on WTIC News Talk 1080. We're talking with Bob Stefanowski, and we'll be back just after the break. Welcome back to WTIC News Talk 1080. This is George Colley, guest hosting, Maddie Sirois producing, answering the calls. And we're talking with Bob Stefanowski, 2018 GOP gubernatorial candidate, former UBS and GE executive. And Bob, just kind of picking up as to where we had talked last time that you were on, you know, I had brought up some of the concerns that I had about when Eversource, when they lift the utility shutoff stoppage, you know, where all of a sudden people who haven't paid their bills could get their power shut off. I have real concerns because we saw those numbers doubling year over year starting back in 2015, 2016. And now we've had people who potentially haven't been able to pay their electric bills, a few hundred dollars a month, potentially for 12 months, for 13 months. And at some point, Eversource is going to be able to lift that stoppage and be able to start demanding the money or get people shut off. And the reason I bring it up, because Susan Campbell wrote a great article, a great op-ed in the Stanford Advocate, basically saying that folks may not be, they're not being told necessarily what protections they have, what rights they have. You know, have you given much thought as to what solutions you would potentially come up with or what could possibly be done to help those people who just have lost their jobs, had their industries shut down, that could be facing power shutoffs here in the next few months?
Well, this is another one, George, where there's two sets of standards. You got and I'm all for corporate America, but Eversource is a monopoly, so they're regulated, and they're actually given a guaranteed rate of return. Yeah. So in the same year where the response to the storm was horrible, and people lost money on spoiled medications and food that went bad, and Pura comes in, the regular, oh, don't worry, we're going to compensate you for that. Well, there's never been any compensation. Eversource made over $1 billion in income last year, in a situation where they performed horribly. The executives, I think the executive this year's pay was cut from $20 million to CEO down to $14 million. She's that really hurts. You're only making $14 million. And the problem is Connecticut is no longer affordable, and people's utility bills, they're higher than their rent payments or their mortgage payments right now, and they can't keep up. And it's lousy service. So that's the definition of a monopoly, where the service gets worse and the price goes up. So Pura needs to step in, George. They're also appointed by the governor, by the way, that Pura board. They should be stepping in and doing their job to protect consumers. Their job is to balance the rights to a profit by Eversource with the rights of consumers to good service at reasonable rates. Who do you think they've been siding with, Pura, over the last few years?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's been the problem for years, is that you have, like, in some cases, I'm not sure it's the case right now. I know when I ran for state senate back in 2008, it was right after, you know, the suppliers were deregulated. And, you know, our electric bills and our family's businesses had exploded in the year or two after that happened. And you looked at Pura, and there were former Eversource people or former Connecticut Light and Power people that were heading the utility regulatory.
They've got no downside. If it's a good year, they make a lot of money. If it's a bad year, like with Sandy, they increase your rates and they recover all their incremental costs. There was an article in The Current a few weeks ago. I think they recovered $500 million over the last year since Sandy. They gradually increase your rate. They bury it in some sort of delivery charge that you have no idea what it really is. Look at your utility bill, George. There's 15 charges on there. I don't even know what they are.
No.
So, again, back to Pura, part of their responsibility is to force utilities to send you a bill that you understand.
Yeah. I mean, I was getting bills last summer after the storm of people, and I could tell you, even people I know very close to, who had like commercial spaces or office spaces shut down. You know, nobody was leasing it, shut down. And they had maybe, you know, the exit sign light, you know, that may have been the only energy source. And so they had used about $2.16 worth of electricity, but the delivery charge was $250 for that $2.16. And so, you know, when you see that this company in a year when so many people couldn't pay that bill, making an increase in profits year over year, it just doesn't make sense.
Where else in the world, George, do you see, and I'm trying to think of an example, maybe there is, maybe your listeners can think of one, where the delivery charge costs more than the product? Where else do you see that in the world?
And not only more, but I mean, it could be multiple times more. I understand that there's a need to upgrade the system, and I understand you may have to cut down trees, but why isn't that coming out of the $1.2 billion with a B in profits?
It's the same as the politicians, George. Everybody takes the hit. We've got an 8.5% unemployment rate in the state of Connecticut. We're higher than every other state other than New York and I think Alaska. Yeah. And what are we doing? We're handing out programs left and right to Democratic operatives. When's the last time you heard Governor Lamont talk about jobs? We're treating the symptom and not the cause. What we should, and I understand the federal stimulus money, you can't do a tax cut, but we got surpluses all over the place. We should be thinking about a corporate tax cut right now. Did you see the press conference yesterday? I thought it was a great question. Somebody asked Governor Lamont, the people in Georgia are not happy right now. What have you done to try to attract some of those companies to come up here?
Nothing.
You know what the answer was? Nothing.
Yeah.
That was his answer. Oh, we haven't done anything on that. Why isn't he out there using some of this money to try to attract businesses to Connecticut to get that 8.5% down rather than subsidizing people who are out of work that really would rather have jobs?
Well, the press release, when you try to do that, wouldn't be as sexy as it was when you were trying to get Amazon and the whole country was trying to do it, and it was a big social media thing. I think there are a lot of companies down there in Georgia that would probably find Stamford or Hartford or New Haven or Danbury a pretty cool place to be. You know, sell it. Bob Stefanowski, we got to go to break here. Thank you so much. I look forward to
George.
These Tuesday morning calls, and we'll certainly be in touch and look forward to it hopefully next week.
Okay, keep up the good work, George. Thank you,
Bob. Have a great day. And we'll be back with your calls just after this, 860-522-9842. Now's the time to call. Let us know what you think. Welcome back, WTIC News Talk 1080. George Colley, guest fill-in broadcaster today, and we're going to get some of you caller broadcasters, the first one being Joe Visconti. Joe, what's
wow,
on your mind
was that
today?
Bob? Was that Bob? Holy smokes, is he on fire, huh?
But Stefanowski's been fired. He's been fired up for a few of these calls, and I agree with him on a lot of the stuff that he's saying.
First one I heard, by calling only to tell you that I have reached out to my New York media people this morning, telling them about your story and the LCs and Todd's and all your work. And I want to know, would you like to be a guest on Tucker or Hannity and break this story nationally?
Well, certainly, if anybody wants to talk about this anywhere, I'd be more than happy to talk about it and raise these questions, Joe.
Okay, great. So please, I'll send you some information. Get me some of your loops. I'll take the Lee Elsie story also and John Lender story. And I'm sending to my people this afternoon. They're going over it and get back to us on which shows, or maybe more than one show. But I need somebody that's going to go on TV, George.
It's certainly if they need anybody to ask these questions, I'd be happy to do it. I think this is important.
Okay, great. And the governor and Max Reese and the rest of the people of in the Capitol, get ready, because you are going to be asked the same questions by Fox News. This is a story that's so big after what happened to DeSantis and that hit piece on 60 Minutes. It's unbelievable. It's not going to go away. It's going to get bigger. And the governor is going to be forced to answer. Basically, he made money. His wife makes money. He makes money. He gamed his own executive orders and made money. And it's the biggest story, and I think the biggest scandal in Connecticut history, compared to John Rowland's little jacuzzi in a lake house. This is ridiculous.
You know, when you look, Joey, at, and I'm not saying that the DeSantis story isn't real. We don't know yet, right? Let's see where this leads.
Well,
we're 60 Minutes is at, but you're looking at a $100,000 donation to a campaign effort from a public supermarket type place. Is the type of place we're doing Stop and Shops. I mean, we're doing supermarkets. That's one place to get out to the people. And so, I'm not sure that $100,000 donation is necessarily going to make a difference for whether or not Ron DeSantis wanted to use a Publix area to be able to do vaccines. That seems to be a common sense thing. But when you look at more than $34 million since 2019 going to this company that's been invested in by Connecticut Innovations, been invested in by the governor's wife's venture capital firm. I just think there's questions that need to be asked. I think we need to find out how many tests they're doing, how many contracts they've gotten. And what I didn't bring up is, did it work? If they were testing nursing homes, what worked and what didn't work? You know, we brought that up from Thermo Fisher Scientific
and
yesterday. We don't know.
Their connection also with New York, what that means, and was there anything connected to New York? Listen, really, this is about the Connecticut media. They failed to do their job. It's been left to you, to Lee Elsie, to Tom Feinberg, three radio hosts across the state, to bring this up, not just right-wing conservative, because the people deserve an answer. So we're going to need to step over the Connecticut media now and bring everything that's important national to national media from Connecticut. And you guys are the launching pads that are doing it, because he's got to answer the questions. We need to know. The public needs to have faith more than ever. The public needs trust, because there's so many problems with either the vaccine, the mask, the washing of the hands. People just really need something they can trust right now. And you're it.
I think that it's, and I don't want to necessarily go after the Connecticut media. I think sometimes we just need to kind of put it all together and then explain it and then ask the questions. And I think that journalists out there will get that.
I know. You're more lovable with them, because you know them. I know them too, for running for offices. But they have really got to dig into this, and they haven't. And if they're hearing this right now, and they are, they need to realize, come on, just do your job. And the governor, come on, just give out the answers. Don't be afraid. Put them out now, because the more you hesitate, the more you stonewall, the more the public mistrusts government. And that's not what we need right now. We need to be able to trust government again.
I agree. And to bring up Todd's show, he's been doing these interviews with Av Harris for his podcast. I mean, these would be major blow up exclusive type interviews that would be commercials for the Sunday morning TV show or promoting it till 11 o'clock that night. I mean, these are big interviews. The things that Aver is saying, as somebody who was in the room, everyone needs to pay attention to this. I mean, he is telling us what happened in the room. And Av Harris, he's, before he goes on Todd, you got to believe he's in the middle of a lawsuit. He's talking to his lawyer before he opens his mouth. And Av Harris is known as a pretty straight shooter. And he's been a loyal Democrat over the years. And when you hear what he says about how the scientists, how Dr. Carter, the state epidemiologists, the people who have been through any administration working on infectious disease, whether going back to swine flu or to Zika or to Ebola or to H2N, any of the other ones we've had, and that the governor wasn't listening to him. Nobody knows who he was talking to. That the DPH comms director had to wait for a Monday or a press conference to find out where the governor stood on something, because they're not sure who he was talking to. And, and now all of a sudden we're seeing these contracts going to companies that are connected to his COO and to his wife's venture capital firm. Doesn't seem right, Joey. Doesn't pass a sniff test.
I know, it doesn't seem right. And for people that are listening that may not know, we all have relationships running for office, or you're in the news media, with Max Reese at NBC 30, who's now the spokesman for the governor. Jonathan Harris from my town, we battled over blue black here. We know everybody in the governor's office. This is people know each other over decades, and we can't believe that they won't open up and say something, or at least push the governor to say, you got to come out. So this is pretty bad if everyone we know is, and you're sending the signal out all the time, come on, just answer something, and they're stonewalling. It's got to be deeper, and that's bad for the public. They need, I'll close with this, they need to have trust in government again. We can't, there's no more authority figures. What do you do? The public has to have faith, and God bless you for doing what you're doing. I will get back to you on which show you're going to be on.
Well, you know, maybe if Hannity or Tucker or 60 Minutes or Rachel or Brian Williams, if they want to ask the questions, maybe they'll answer them. Governor Love, maybe if CNBC asked the questions, he would definitely jump on that one. He loves those international or national interviews. Even if he doesn't give the truth when he does them, he'll just make it up to get the headline, as
no
we've seen in the past.
To Fox News, Tucker, Hannity, whoever, Laura Ingraham, no comment isn't going to work, Governor Lamont. You're going to need to fess up. And if you're going to give the money, I love what Jimmy Grasso said, you're going to give the money back, fine. Itemize it. Let's see it transparently. And
transparency.
Give it to the state. Don't give it to a charity that could be a friend of your wife's pet charity. Give it to the state of Connecticut back. You gamed your executive order, and even under an emergency, you should have reported it, as DeSantis did for his donation from Publix. It's reported. You didn't report it to the ethics people until it was too late, and you had to come forward. So,
And the problem is it's actually not too late. That's what's crazy. There's no deadline. We don't know if there's other companies that may have gotten contracts that are connected, because they don't have a deadline as to when they need to tell ethics. The toughest ethics rules in the country here in Connecticut, they don't have a deadline as to when they need to tell us.
There is no ethics anymore. Ethics is just definable by who's in power and who's controlling the budget to the Ethics Commission. And the very small budget they have, and a very small inside circle of those ethics commissions. We know them all. I won't mention names, but we know them all. And they're beholden to the Democrat Party in Connecticut.
And I'm not going after ethics. They are held to the laws and to the rules as they are written. And so, but maybe this is something where ethics could start.
I think if there's national coverage on this, and it should be, if anything, to clear the air and to separate Cuomo from Lamont. They were joined at the hip for months and months and months. And we don't know what that means. Again, this is all not allegedly. We're all not saying criminality happened. We're saying things happen in executive orders, emergency conditions, and it's time to know. We're not going to hold government. You're not going to be able to hide this past the election of 2022. This will become political. No way it's not going to be. Get it over with. If it's bad, get it out. Wash it. Flush it. Be honest with the public. That's my advice. God bless you, George.
Joe Visconti.
I'll take care.
Have a great day, sir. Thank you very much. Now, we're going to go to a break here, and then when we get back, we've got the Ferris from Myrtle Beach. We've got Tim and Hamden. We've got Tom and Avon. Hang tight. We'll be back with you just after the break. Welcome back to WTIC News Talk 1080. This is George Colley, guest hosting today, guest broadcasting. We've got full-time producer Maddie Sorois answering the calls. And we've got the Ferris from Myrtle Beach, been held on the line for a while. Ferris, what's on your mind today?
G4, you are a rock star in radio. See, what you are for us is you are Limbaugh localized. Because
I can't live up to that.
Well, I beg your pardon?
I'm not sure I could live up to that, but I appreciate the compliment.
You are the local Limbaugh, and you have all the same characteristics and instincts and talent I've learned from God that Limbaugh had. And what do you get? You get callers like former gubernatorial candidate Joe Visconti from Weeha. You get Jimmy Grasso, son of a governor. Right? You get callers of value. You have guest broadcasters such as Susie Hunter. My God in heaven, what a lovely and gracious lady she is.
She's great, isn't she? I thought the Sioux would be a nice, positive kind of breath of fresh air for everybody for a few minutes yesterday.
Fresh air. Well, radio's a tough medium, George, you know, because that's why you do so well at it. But here's what Limbaugh did that you might want to suggest. That he put out, he and Shirley got together. James Golden was on with
Mark Stein last night. I don't know if you caught him, but Golden is a tremendous character.
Sure.
Bo Snerdly is his radio name. And he's the guy who made that show as producer to be as great as it was. Limbaugh would not have done what he did without Bo Snerdly from day one till he ended. Anyway.
Well, I've got my Snerdly here. I got Matt Snerdly Sirois here answering the calls.
But he's living up. He'll live up to the Snerdly standard if we give it to him. So here's what they did. Snerdly put his head together with Limbaugh. And he said, how about this, Rush? Right? And my thoughts go to Susie Hunter, at the Susie Hunter.
The Suze.
Right? And they said, okay, here's what we do, Rush. All the women who want to call in, we just tell them to send in a picture to get pre-qualified to come on the show.
We're not. The Suze would never have a problem getting through, whether it was a picture or just her talent. That's what I'll say.
I'm not talking about Suze. I'm talking about the people in the hinterlands, North Connecticut. What the hell is that? Is there a town called Norcon? I don't know. I've never been there. But so any callers, female callers, want to call in, must submit a picture of themselves. And, of course, Limbaugh was inundated with millions of pictures of women to get on their show, and they had a great laugh. I don't know if you ever heard him recount that, but he mentioned that story many times on radio, and they have played it since his demise.
I've listened to a lot of the shows, and I listened to him over the years, really since he came. I mean, TIC 1080 has always just kind of been the background, as I was driving around in the afternoons. But I haven't heard that one. And I think it was nowadays, I think that would be the first thing to get me canceled if I started asking for pictures on the radio. But I could imagine that Rush probably had a heck of a time with that one.
It's entertaining, that's all. And it was called Excellence in Broadcasting for a reason. And he set the standard. He broke the mold. He did what you're doing. You're bringing something that no one has ever brought before to the airwaves of WTIC, never as this combination of entertainment and enlightenment been what it is with you. So we do appreciate what you bring, but talking about guests from yesterday, another station had a guest, former fellow graduate of mine from Rockville High School. He's a senator in the Connecticut legislature. His name is Danny Champagne.
Sure, I know Dan Champagne.
You know Danny? Well, Danny came on another station as guest broadcaster, and what they're going to do is start opening it up so that if you have a guest like Steffi...
By the way, I know you were upset with Stefanowski last week saying he wasn't tough. He's been fired up these last few times.
He's not a fire. See, your problem in Connecticut is you cannot vote. And he knows that there's no voting. And he had a chance to expose the vote fraud in New Haven and Bridgeport and Waterbury and Guilford and New London and Rockville. And he instead of fighting that to expose, see, you've got to peel the onion away. You got to do what Colley does. Colley exposes the corruption in Corrupticut. You're invaluable to us. You are our last best hope. You are the great white hope. If you don't get us on track, This state will be written off forever, folding under the weight of its corruption. It's called Corrupticut because there's no voting.
I got to go to the break here. The one last thing I want to ask you, Ferris, what about the singing yesterday? Should I pick that up or should I slow down on the singing?
You're singing yesterday. Every time you did the Adele thing, it improved until you were on pitch by the end.
We got it. It's a work in progress. I haven't had that singing voice since I think the second grade choir. So I got a little bit of work to do on that. But
I'll echo Joe Mascani. You know, keep up what you're doing, George. You're the only hope we have. And please, when you have guest broadcasters, let the listeners call in and have a shot at them. And then we'll feel more like, and it's fairer anyway, because they are your guests, and you have to be nice to them, and they're friends of yours. We're not friends of theirs. We want to know what the hell is going on in this state. Oh, not so.
One thing I will say, here's one way that maybe we could do this, Ferris. I can keep the Twitter machine up when I'm doing some of these interviews. any of you out there that do have some questions based on it, send it to me on the spot. There's a very good chance that I'll be able to see it. And if I'm doing these segment-long interviews, be able to ask those questions. So that may be one way right now to be able to keep – you never want two people necessarily – more than two people talking on the radio. That was the one rule that I was told early on. So maybe that's something we could do at the beginning. If you or anybody out there has questions as I'm interviewing people, send me the question at George Colley on Twitter. I can say, you know – Ferris sent in this question from on his bike ride with the nurse there in Myrtle Beach, and here's what he wants to know, and I can do it right on the spot. Ferris, thanks for the call. We're going to go to a break.
Here's what the Amishman said. He said, you can only do what you can only do.
Exactly. So we'll try to figure out what we can do here. Thank you for the call, Ferris. I appreciate it. And Tom and Tim will be back with you just after this. Welcome back. WTIC News Talk 1080. George Colley, as the Ferris would say, guest fill-in host broadcaster. We've got Maddie Sirois producing. Connecticut Snerdly. It's 10:38, 25 seconds if you're putting your clocks right on your cars. And we're taking calls pretty much for the rest of the show. So you guys may have to wait through a break. I'd like to let it breathe, let you guys kind of talk. So if you got anything you want to say, give us a call. Let's go to Tom and Avon, who has been on hold for a long time. Tom, thank you for holding through those
long
calls.
First item, I don't use a computer, but I got a tablet, but I don't know how to manipulate anything. But I did, and it's not a new subject for me. It's carbon dioxide, and it's the amount that nature puts in the atmosphere and the amount that humans put in.
Okay.
Now, I have managed to find two different items that indicate to me that humans contribute
4%. 4% of carbon
dioxide into the atmosphere.
Okay.
And we're going to spend, as far as, if that is correct, then we're spending or intend to spend trillions of dollars for 16 or 17 molecules per million. In the atmosphere, there's 400, 410 molecules in the atmosphere per million.
Mm-hmm.
And most people agree on that. That could be a little investigation by somebody, some scientist.
Explain that again. So what would the investigation be?
To determine whether that 4% is correct.
Okay.
If it's 4%, most people now think there's 400, 410%, 10 parts of the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. That means 16 or 17 of the molecules are contributed by humans, which means we're spending trillions of dollars to reduce that amount,
sure.
That 16 or 17 molecules. And that's ridiculous, if it's true.
You know what I can do is, I mean, here's my problem with me when it comes to science.
That's all right. That's all right.
There's I don't know if I'd even understand where to look at it. But, yeah, I mean, if there's any scientists out there that want to call in and let us know more about this, we will certainly give you that opportunity. And so,
I had one other thing that
sure.
I hit with real fast.
Of course, you waited a long
500,
time.
500,000 deaths from COVID. Mm-hmm. And so I did get the... some of the deaths by year in the United States, 2015, 2.7 million, 16, 2.7, 2.8, 2.8, 2019, 2.9. Now, 2.9 million, you think another 500, that'd be 2020 about
3.4. Yeah, you're looking 3. At about 20%. They're reporting that over the last year, I think in 2020, it was about a 20% increase in excess deaths because of COVID.
That would be if it's 500, it'd be 3.4. But
yeah, I think it's around 3.2 is where the number of deaths were last
3.1
year.
3.1 is what I found.
Yep, that
sounds
right.
That's just up 200 million. Well, just you know, but we're short a few million here.
Well,
that just confirms that you know it's deaths with COVID, not deaths from COVID.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's what it's looking at is, and that's why, you know, there were more deaths in 2020 than there had been in previous years. I mean, so I know people have said that it's the same amount of deaths as we've had, you know, always when you include flu and this and that, and it's not. It's about 20% more. It's not a 200% more, but it's 20% more. And that's where, you know, it seems to be like, you know, that that's where the facts are at this point.
If it's 200 million above 2.9, you know, it's not.
Don't get me to do math.
That's a little less than 10%.
Well, yeah, I mean, if there were 2.8 million deaths and there's that 3.1, 3.2, you're looking at about you know, would that be about 15-20% increase? Correct.
No.
10% of 2.8 million is 280,000.
Well, 2.9 in 2019.
So, I mean, I think the point is, what I want to get across is, I know that people have said that there were no more extra deaths, the same amount of people died for COVID, and that doesn't appear to be what the facts are at this point. It may not be as much as some.
Well, I just find spending all that money on 17 molecules per million is a lot more important. But the
yeah, I mean, I think certainly the science, if any scientists could kind of send that stuff over, I'll take a look at it. Tom, thanks so much for the call and for holding. Let's go to Tim in Hamden. What's up, Tim?
Well, hi, George. I really like your show, but I've got to take a few exceptions with some of the comments. First off, can we stop, for the dear Lord, for all these people calling in and saying that the Roland scandal was about, hot tubs up at this lake house. Anybody who, you know, has access to the computers can look at things like the Tommaso scandal, $500,000 donation, to steer the contracts.
Here's a question I have, Tim. Roland was 15 years ago. What do you think about what's happening right now with Semaphore getting $34 million in state money over the last two fiscal years and going public and no bid contracts and not answering the questions as to how many
I actually called about that. And, and you've been doing, a very good job about this, but, I only brought up Roland, and I know you don't want to talk about Roland, but
I'll talk about Roland.
About the DeSantis, situation. Yeah. You're kind of burying the lead, okay? Why would a corporation give $100,000 to a candidate for governor? That's what
by the way, every corporation is giving monies to people that are, especially if they are governor and they could be potentially running for president. There's a lot of corporations that are going to find their way as to where to give money to Ron DeSantis or anybody else in that situation.
Yeah, I am not saying that they're guilty.
And we're having real trouble with your phone here, Tim. Are you on a Bluetooth or something? You keep breaking up.
What I'm just saying is that we don't need to bury the lead in the fact that these corporations and they.
But what do you think about the $34 million going to Semaphore in a no bid and these no bid contracts? It's $34 million over the last few years from the state
like
of Connecticut
said,
compared to.
I repeat, George, and I know you.
I'm having a hard time hearing you because of your phone. That may be the problem.
I've said, we have to definitely investigate that, but,
and who should investigate it, do you think?
Well, I think, the state ethics commissions, the other people and everything involved, just like the situation with, DeSantis, if he's steering money toward one, corporation, getting them, if Stop and Shop got the contract, but Big Y was, shut out of, giving out the vaccines, but, Stop and Shop made a big contribution to our governor, we'd be, sitting there going, huh, what, all of that sort of stuff. So it's, we've got to, I'm only bringing
the... When the Democrats in Florida are saying 60 Minutes, that we told you we brought up this idea to have Publix do this because there are so many of them around Florida. Does that change your opinion at all of it?
No, because, there are many places and stuff that could be doing. They need to be find an equitable way to do it. And again, I don't know why Republicans, have this hard time. We need to have public financing of campaigns. No corporations.
I think public financing campaigns in Connecticut have been nothing but incumbent protectors. If you want to beat a 20-year incumbent as somebody who tried, You need to outraise them 4 or 5 times to 1. That's the way it works. I think that this has become an incumbent protector in this state, and it's all the same consultants that are making the money. There were actual state representatives making hundreds of thousands of dollars on campaign finance money. This state with their ethics and with their campaign finance, they got so it's so, the swamp is so swampy in this stuff here in Connecticut. Thanks for the call, Tim. I'm having a real trouble listening to you, or not listening to you, hearing you because of the phone. Thanks for the call. And we're going to go to a break right now and then come back to Frank and Woodbridge. Welcome back to WTIC News Talk 1080. This is George Colley. We have Maddie Sorois producing. We're taking your calls, 860-522-9842, 860-522-WTIC. Got my friend Frank in Woodbridge. What's happening, Frank?
Good, George. How was your Easter?
It was fantastic. I was able to spend it with my parents. They were able to see their grandkids early in the day, which they hadn't had a whole lot of chance to do over the last year, so it was a good day for the Colley family. How was it for you?
Well, if you go by the scale, I had a very nice time.
I put about 6 on since I talked to you last, Frank. I cheated myself.
I've always said the important things in life are the 3 F's, family, friends, and food.
Amen to that.
George, a couple things. One, I remember talking about this a long time ago. In my opinion, John Rowland was guilty of one thing, being a threat as a Republican to the Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. If he was a Democrat in this state of Connecticut, he never would have been prosecuted. And you look at what he did compared to what these other people are doing, it's a day at the beach. That's the way I look at it.
When you look at what's happening, I mean, am I? You've been paying attention a long time, Frank, right? I mean, this isn't your first rodeo here in Connecticut and following politics, not only here but around the country. Am I wrong in asking these questions about Semaphore and these no-bid contracts?
Right.
I mean, am I off track?
No, you're 100% right. But, George, what you got to understand is politics and crime are the same thing. You know what I mean? Second thing. People put too much faith in doctors and scientists. 25 years ago, I was told I would never get something last Friday. What did I get? My first Social Security check. Don't put faith in these doctors and scientists. They're nothing but men. They're not God. That's the point. And just because Dr. Fauci or anybody else says something about the virus, that doesn't mean what he says is the word is as good as gold. They're just moral men who make mistakes or have other objectives, like making money on this deal.
Well, that is what worries you about it. And, of course, I mean, after all this year, after a whole year, Frank, can you believe that we're now being told you don't need the sanitizing, that that's all, it's all 1 in 10,000 chance that you'd get this COVID from that? My hands are just down to the bone from sanitizing alcohol every time I wash it. I mean, can you believe that after all the money that's spent, this and that, that that doesn't really matter?
George, we're born to die.
Yeah, good point.
I mean, people in this country have got to wake up and understand that we all got to go one day. Mm-hmm. And you look at the people, I still say this, George, the people are not dying from coronavirus, they're dying from complications to coronavirus.
Good point.
The majority of these people died, and I don't want to see anybody die, but it's a fact of life. They're either elderly, obese, or they're diabetic, or all 3 of them. And, George, the fact is, if you have those 3 things, you're not going to be around long, George. Yeah. That's a sad reality. People that are obese and diabetics, they don't have to worry about a nursing home. They're not going to make it, George. The killer is known as diabetes. Hmm. That's the killer.
And it's how your immune system reacts to this.
Well, it doesn't react when you're a diabetic.
Or it doesn't.
It's weak. And then a virus comes along, or the flu comes along, and they say that kills you. No, what really killed you was diabetes. And the sad thing about diabetes is, George, I don't know the exact figure, but I would say at least 95% of the people in America are not born a diabetic. So what does that mean? It's self-inflicted.
Yeah.
You got to take better care of yourself. There's about 1% of the population, and it looks like, I know my father was in this group, and it looks like I'm in it, who could do anything they want, and they're going to die whatever their age is. Yeah. But the other 99% can't be like that, because you're going to die young. It's a sad reality.
I hope you enjoy cashing that check from last week.
Well, I'll tell you, I called up my doctor and I let him know about it.
Yeah, good for you. Good for you. And remind him, you know, have a little glass of vino or a little bit of good pasta or something like that, you know, and celebrate that.
He goes, Frank, God bless you. I never thought you'd see that first check. Well, I got it. I got my first check.
We talked about some of the planning you've been doing right now. The last time you called in, you got a long time to plan that, Frank. You keep calling in with us. I appreciate
it. Well, guess what they want? Do you know what the price of mausoleums are?
You were saying, no, what is it? How much is it there?
Oh, they go, well, the ones I was looking at, it was just not for me, for other family members.
Yeah.
They go up to $100,000.
Holy cow. You might as well build a whole house. You might as well build a mausoleum for yourself.
I know it's your final place, but, you're talking some big money here for a mausoleum.
Let me tell you, I think we're in the wrong business, Frank.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, thanks.
Take care,
have a great day. Dave in Coventry. How we doing, Dave?
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for the call.
I was, after Vicevich left, I kind of strayed away in the morning, but started listening to you, and I'm captivated by you. I think you're doing a fantastic job.
Well, thank you.
And I got a DeSantis comment.
Sure.
I'm surprised the attack came so early, 3 years before 2024, mm-hmm. but the Democrats have all already pinpointed DeSantis as the front runner. So the destruction, the destroy campaign started in earnest with the interview, and it's going to be nonstop, and it was just bull how they did it. And I don't know if it was brought up earlier today, but the Publix also made the same exact monetary donation to the Democratic governor candidate.
Is it Gillum?
The mayor from Tampa.
Yep.
But you didn't hear that. You just heard one thing. They contributed equal amounts to both parties. So I think that's just a bunch of bunk. And I can't believe it started this early, that they're just, it's a smear campaign already beginning. They've pinpointed DeSantis as the guy to beat, and you're going to see it now for, they're going to be snooping up his now till the end. And it's just ruthless and dirty. And I have slowly, over the past couple of years, my confidence, faith in the honesty of the media is almost completely eroded. It's amazing that it's almost crazy that I rarely believe half the things I read now from the news that I used to trust growing up implicitly.
And I hate that. I mean, I hate that, that it's taken a side where you feel that way. I mean, as somebody who has made a lot of sacrifices over the last 10 or 11 years to try to do it right and try to do journalism as it is, and I am not perfect. And if I'm incorrect or I misspeak or I say something, I will try to correct it as soon as possible for you. I think people appreciate that and understand that. But it's, knowing the sacrifices that we made that we've gotten to this point kills me. January 6th killed me. I worked in that Capitol for 2 years. I worked at the White House to see what happened, to see Americans, to see what happened between, there were so many potentially military veterans or police officers going against the state going against the Capitol Police there like that, seeing that building just get, overtaken that way, killed me. And I believe that it comes down to people not understanding what the truth is, that it gets to a point where there's actually legitimate discussion from sane people spreading stories that Anderson Cooper's eating baby flesh, that actually became something real, tells us how far the media has gone. And it's... I just hope that we can get to a point, and I hope the media gets to a point, or their shareholders or the companies that own them or whatever it is, just kind of say, we need to get back to just giving the information. We have one of the most trusted anchors ever, Lester Holt, saying you don't have to tell two sides of a story anymore. Where are we at this point, Dave?
I agree. It's just propaganda. And sometimes I wonder... It almost seems like there's a grandiose plan to split this country in two.
Charles Barkley talked about it.
I'm telling you. But I'm like, so I think that's possible. But then I go to the fact, okay, who is doing this and what's the end game? What's the ultimate motivation? Why would you want to split a country in two? Why would you want to destroy a country from inside the country? I could see an outside source, communist China.
Well, I'll be honest, this is exactly what the Russia investigation was about how our enemies are trying to divide us from within. And the media got so caught up in the scandalous stuff that was or was not true about Trump that they've missed the whole point of this, that they are not rooting for any, Russia or China or Iran are not rooting for any particular candidate. What they're rooting for is to divide this country from within. And they're using social media and propaganda to do it. It's on our own Facebook pages. They're using us to share it. And this is where we need to be more educated. This is where we need to fight back. It's where we need to take off our Red Sox versus Yankee hat and start just asking for the truth no matter what political party. Start cleaning up your party from within. And that's why I got to go to a break here, Dave. I hope you keep listening. Okay. I hope you call in anytime. I appreciate
it. Okay. Take care.
We'll be back just after this. Good morning. Welcome back. George Colley, WTIC News Talk 1080. Maddie Sorois producing. Taking your calls here in the last hour. Let us know what you think. We've been talking about the semaphore, comparing it to the 60 Minutes DeSantis story. That story was about a $100,000 donation from Publix to the DeSantis campaign. As somebody just called in, I think there was same donation was given to the other Democratic candidate last time around. You know, this is what corporations do. They give money. I'm not sure $100,000 is going to buy necessarily all of the COVID testing. There were other companies that were also involved in the testing. I compared it to here in Connecticut, where over $34 million has gone to Semaphore, a company that is closely connected to the venture capital firm that's managed and founded by First Lady Annie Lamont, a company that had merged and partnered up with the company that current COO and former CEO of Core Informatics, Josh Cabal, had been involved in. $34 million, no big contract. Is that a story? Is that a story? Let's see if Matt in New Hartford thinks it's a story. What's happening, Matt?
Hi, George. First time caller, but I've called many, many times to WTIC, to Pastor Will and Todd.
Well, so I appreciate welcome. You calling. And, thank you.
Yeah, I've been enjoying your show. I am so ripped right now with these Republican state, commission, whatever it is, Republican
lawmakers.
Party.
Yep.
Well, just the Republican Party themselves that, you know, try to get people elected. They need to take a little bit of a play out from the Democratic playbook, which is go for the jugular, get some cojones. And go after the SEMAFOR thing. I've known about the SEMAFOR for a long time because I do keep up on stuff.
Sure.
And this is something that if this was a Republican governor that did this, he'd be out 7-8 months ago. They would annihilated him. So what is wrong with this party that can't seem to get its act together and, you know, and get going on this stuff? This guy needs to be tarred and feathered and out of office.
I mean, at least needs to answer the questions. I mean, here's the thing. 6 weeks I've been raising this. I was just looking through some notes in the last break. It was March 2nd when I first kind of laid out. It actually wasn't even when I first laid out. I think it was just when I had first kind of brought this up. And on March 2nd, there had been 72 payments this fiscal year for $14.5 million, almost $14.6 million. There's been another few hundred thousand dollars that's gone to SEMAFOR since then. What are they getting this money for? Why is this not a question that should be answered, that they should want to answer if it was upfront, if it was clean, if it wasn't anything, you know, erroneous? Why is nobody shutting me up yet? Why is nobody defending the governor? Why is nobody giving the answer that would put this thing away?
Well, George, I can only tell you that when I heard that, because I was listening to you, I can't every single day, but
sure,
when I heard that, there was a big shout in my car. Yes. I mean, it was, you know, finally somebody, you know, that somebody's going to do and make this public. And because, like I said, I've known about it for a long time, just on little snippets of stuff I've heard, but nobody wants to do anything. You're right. And I think the Republicans should blast this all over the place. And we need to take back the state. Pretty soon, there's not going to be a Republican on the legislature or Senate because they're going to win everything. They're going to change the voting laws. They're going to do everything they can, and there won't be anybody that's going to get elected Republican.
It's a, you know, somebody brought up the campaign financing reform. This is going to be a whole other subject where, you know, I've done some stories on this over the years, over the last 10 years. But, you know, one thing that I really do believe is that, yes, I think the campaign finance reform, you know, when it comes to the funding for state races, it's great as a candidate. You raise the $15,000 in the state Senate, you don't got to raise any more after that. But you're not going to beat anybody if you're on equal terms. If you to beat an incumbent when they can send out the free mailers to everybody in the district every single month, you know, you need to outraise them 2, 3, 4 times to 1. So let's look at what the elections have been like in Connecticut since 2008, when it has been the equal basic funding for all these candidates. How have things looked? You know, there have been some change elections. But for the most part, you're just seeing there's absolutely you can't beat the incumbent because you can't outraise them, you know, unless there's some scandal or whatever it was that, you know, that or a national swing like we saw certainly potentially this past year.
Right.
But I appreciate the call, and I hope that you stay on this with us, Matt.
Keep up the good work, my friend.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you listening. Let's go to Mark. Hey, Mark, what's happening?
Hi, I wanted to say that I really appreciated what you said with regard to your commitment to tell the truth and your integrity just 2 callers ago.
Sure.
And I wanted to encourage you to bring that integrity to challenge both your bosses and the callers. That when the callers say something like 500 million people died of diabetes rather than of COVID.
I didn't hear him say that. I mean, it was...
You would challenge... Well, hold on. Or when... Your bosses, who have been putting people on for probably the past 30 years, saying, you know, Dominion voting machines change votes, or Barack Obama wasn't born in the United States.
I can't. I wasn't on air at that point. So
But that's not my point.
By the way, he didn't say 500 million people died of diabetes. He was saying the 500,000 COVID deaths, and then he brought up diabetes.
I said million. I'm sorry. I meant thousand.
Yeah,
right.
And the 500, and he was saying 500,000 COVID deaths
in
that diabetes statement.
Yeah, but all these things are said, and this broadcasting network has a responsibility to the public to broadcast things that are true, and it was so good to hear you say that.
Thank you. When I can say it, I don't want to get a call. I'm trying out for this job, so I'm not going to be slamming the whole broadcasting network right now.
Well,
I hope people can understand
isn't that
and I can't defend. Well, I mean,
isn't that what journalism takes on some level? Aren't you making a commitment to that?
Well,
and
I think by showing it
years,
is what I can do.
This station has broadcast people that have said demonstrably untrue things.
Well, I think it's calling radio, and I got to tell you, it is the most nerve-wracking thing going to callers. Just an honest thing. This isn't anything against your call. I love your call, Mark.
No, I understand.
But the idea is, you know, when you don't know what they're saying.
I'm actually criticizing your network, and I appreciate that you're listening to me.
No, I don't believe in censorship, you know, and so I believe we need to have these discussions. But I can tell you, you know, as people start saying things, I'm Googling it. I'm trying to ask them where the sources are from. If there's a source that I know is a little bit wacky, you know, I try to make it clear. But I can tell you it's tough, you know, to try. There's people can call on any issues.
Your bosses are putting people like Rush Limbaugh on the line that called a young woman a prostitute for using, and they're doing these things, and they're doing it to make money. And I appreciate that you're making a commitment to integrity, and I would hope that you're challenging the people that are doing things like that or saying demonstrably false things and repeating false claims. And I don't care whether that's the callers.
We certainly try to do that.
I hear you're trying to do a good job, but I'll tell you, your station has done a demonstrably poor job. And what the story that you referenced about what's-his-name eating baby flesh?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
Anderson
being
Cooper,
spread
the QAnon
among
stuff.
These populations and through these sources. You know, I mean, what do you think? We both know what's happening, and nobody's calling it out, and we allow it to happen because, well, the callers can say anything, or that's free speech.
Here's one thing that I want to say,
too. That's hurting our country.
Here's one thing I want to say, Mark, is that I'm not sure that it is Trump conservative voters that are calling in and saying the Trumpiest, most conservative things. I think each side at this point could be having people just to get people fired up right now
from
the other side. And so that's why I want to make sure that gets across.
I agree with you. I agree with you. I mean, the idea that the thing that I don't know anything about the thing that you're referencing with the governor, but that deserves to be investigated. And then the truth can come out. We should shed some daylight on that. My concern, though, is that when you try to shed daylight on something, and then let's face it, more conservative callers call this radio station.
Well, this has been a conservative talk radio show. I mean, this is for the most part.
Well, the conservative talk radio doesn't mean that it's not truthful, and that's the problem.
I will say this:
there's been a lot of untruthful things said on this radio station.
Well, I think there's been a lot of unfaithful things said on all media right now, and I think that I don't want to go against any one station or any one coast or any one anything.
Well, hold on. That's like saying to me. Well, you
By the way, 60 Minutes appears to say something this week that may have been untruthful.
They should take responsibility
for that. Yeah,
you're asking them to take responsibility, and I agree with that. Shouldn't your station take responsibility for the things that are on their air?
You know, I think they try to. I think they have them.
Not well enough. Not if you're putting, you know, Rush Limbaugh and continually saying untruthful things.
And I've got to go. Rush is passed, and God bless his soul. Thank you for the call, Mark. I want to make sure anybody has their say, good or bad things that they may have. But like I said, I mean, I can't go back 30 years of every single thing that Rush Limbaugh may have said. But we will be back to hear what Patty has to say about it. We'll be back after this. Welcome back. WTIC News Talk 1080. This is George Colley. Fill-in guest host broadcaster. We got call-in broadcasters. We got Patty from Naugatuck. And then we're going to play a little something kind of going along with what I was saying here in the last few segments. And I wanted to let that guy talk. You know, I want to be able to show that I can take the criticism. Just make sure if you call me in and complain about what a caller said that you give the right information. Frank didn't talk about 500 million people with diabetes dying. He was talking about the 500,000, or the other guy, about the 500,000 in COVID deaths. I think it was Tom and Avon. So let's just make sure that if you're going to call and criticize, you have every right to. Just make sure that you're giving the right information if you're criticizing us on something. Let's go to Patty in Naugatuck. And then I'm going to play that sound from Charles Barkley the other day, if you guys hadn't heard it. Do we have that up yet, Maddie? Let's play that right now. Then we're going to go to Patty. I just want you guys to think about this. This is what Charles Barkley said, and good on him.
Man, I think most white people and black people are great people. I really believe that in my heart. But I think our system is set up where our politicians, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, are designed to make us not like each other so they can keep their grasp of money and power. They divide and conquer. I truly believe in my heart most white people and black people are awesome people, but we're so stupid following our politicians, whether they are Republicans or Democrats. And their only job is, hey, let's make these people not like each other. We don't live in their neighborhoods. We all got money. Let's make the whites and blacks not like each other. Let's make rich people and poor people not like each other. Let's scramble the middle class. I truly believe that in my heart.
Charles Barkley, good on you. Just remember some of the things we've heard over the last week. Every time that the governor's asked a question that's a little bit uncomfortable in those press releases that talk about how things are going in Connecticut, and he starts going after Republican governors in Texas or Florida in his answer. Let's remember when the governor, you know, we don't know why, when he was talking about vaccination passports and he started mocking white people in NASCAR. Maybe you guys want to go to your NASCAR race, then, you know, you're going to have to get a passport. Maybe then they'll get one. No, governor, we're not anti-vax. But we are, I don't believe, a country that isn't, that you shouldn't have to give a QR code app tracking everywhere you go up to a private business to walk into that business every day. Show us your papers, and it's up to the private business to decide whether to do it, and then can discriminate against you, then can segregate you inside of a restaurant. Is that what we're pushing, Governor? Is that bringing the country together? Good for you, Charles Barkley. You're absolutely right. Let's go to Patty in Naugatuck. Hey, Patty.
Hi, good morning, George, and thank you for what you do. And I appreciate the time you're giving me, too. And you know what? You know, we're all callers, and honestly and truly, our opinions may vary, but we do our best to, I think most people, to bring adequate information and to try to be truthful.
I agree.
And I have great appreciation for the truth. I think the truth is everything, and I think it's, it adds to what's valid and what it is. But I wanted to say, I believe I heard that we didn't need to disinfect our hands anymore.
So, yeah, listen to this one, Patty. I just pulled this up.
Okay.
So this is from Yahoo News. I think it's an AP article.
All right.
And it came from the CDC guidance issued yesterday.
Okay.
That this is the head of the article. It's time to unplug the sanitizing robots and put away the bottles of Clorox that seem to line the entrances to every school, restaurant, and supermarket wanting to advertise its safety protocols. While such protocols may be reassuring to the anxious populace, they are not necessary, says a revised guidance issued on Monday by the CDC. It is possible for people to be infected through contact with contaminated surfaces or objects, but the risk is generally considered to be low, the new CDC guidance says, estimating that the chance of contracting the coronavirus through surface transmission is lower than 1 in 10,000. What do you think of that, Patty?
Well, I'll tell you, I was a critical care registered nurse, and one of the things I always made a point of doing is washing my hands.
Yep.
Hands are major trackers, and even with this virus, they told you to keep your hands away from your eyes, your nose, and your mouth.
Yes.
In fact, I think a lot of people were adjusting our masks because they don't always fit properly and may have even, you know, brought bacteria or viruses to our face by the fact of adjusting our masks. That's why doctors wash their hands before surgeries. That's why, you know, they have gloves.
I hope we all wash our hands as often as we can.
Right? Bacteria and viruses, my experience with them, they live on surfaces. The difference with them are some are more virulent than others. Some live longer on surfaces than on others. So to be quite honest with you, I think washing our hands is exceedingly important.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we stop doing that, especially with a virus or flu season, you are going to be fine that your hands may be trackers. And that's what happens in nursing homes, because they have very high nosocomial infections. And that's because people go from patient to patient, and maybe for some reason or another reason, they're not always washing their hands between patients to patients, and they spread some things as like MRSA, VRE, et cetera. But what I am going to say on it is my daughter in 2010 had H1N1, highly contagious. She was the sickest she ever was in her entire life.
Yep.
I washed my hands. I did not wear a mask. I washed my hands multiple times. She had her own Kleenex box. She had her own towel. I never got it. Mm-hmm. My daughter and my husband had the flu in 2006 together.
Mm-hmm.
I had a flu shot. They all had flu shots. Mm-hmm. And it was the end of the season. I took care of them both. They both had their own towel. They both had their own Kleenex box. And you want to know what? I washed my hands, and yes, they were raw, and I never got it from either one of them. And I'm not saying it's not airborne. I wouldn't stand in the line of fire when somebody's actually coughing, but I will honestly tell you, what you carry on your hands could very likely end up between your eyes, your nose, and your mouth,
mm-hmm.
and that's how you catch things. So if people are worried about their hands, I can honestly say I know Purell is a very high percentage of alcohol. I believe it's 70%,
mm-hmm.
and I use...
Welcome back, WTIC News Talk 1080. This is George Colley, fill-in guest broadcasting, producer Maddie Sirois. Talking about quite a few things today, the biggest focus being this DeSantis 60 Minutes story, $100,000 donation that Publix made to the DeSantis reelection bid, CBS suggesting that there was a possible link between that donation and the state partnership with Publix stores for vaccine distribution. $100,000, kind of thrown out there. What about $34 million over 2019, 2020, 2021 fiscal year going to Semaphore? Somebody should call in and tell me how to pronounce that. Nobody wants their business mispronounced. That's the company that is connected to both First Lady Annie Lamont, venture capital firm, also connected to COO Josh Cabal. They get fast-tracked, literally Josh tossing it off to Deirdre, tossing it off to Comptroller Lembo, and within 10 days, they're doing thousands of tests per day. That's $9 million initial contract. I think it's been $14 million more this year, $15 million maybe at this point. That was as of a month ago. I think it's a story. Certainly, if the DeSantis story is a story, if this was DeSantis and his wife with the hedge fund and the no big contract and the $30 million in testing and whatever else they're doing, we don't know because they're not telling us. I think that would be a story if DeSantis' wife had a venture capital firm that got no big contracts to do testing for just about everybody. Here's what we also don't know. Was the testing accurate? You know, the testing for nursing homes. Connecticut had a handle on all of it after the first wave there in May. How come we still got, I don't know, 1,100, 1,200 deaths in nursing homes and assisted living centers since then? I don't know how many staffs. I'll look through that. We'll do that tomorrow. Staff members in long-term care facilities. Did the testing work that this company that's going public in a SPAC for billions of dollars at some point here this quarter? Did the testing work? We read that Thermo Fisher Scientific back last August 17, 2020, the FDA sending out a big warning to everybody. This testing kit, not accurate. Using that it was in Connecticut, where 90 tests that were used for nursing homes and assisted living centers, they weren't accurate. It was false tests. But then we looked through Connecticut Open Checkbook, and there's no money in the last, certainly since through COVID, that's gone to Thermo Fisher Scientific. So who did get paid for those inaccurate tests? What is the name of the company? Thermo Fisher Scientific bought out Josh Gabal's former company, Core Informatics. Then they teamed up with Sema4 with their lab management systems. So will somebody tell us before this company goes public? Was there any inaccurate test? Are they connected? It may not be. I don't know. Nobody's answering the questions, so I can't tell you. Let's see what Kevin says in Hartford. Hey, Kevin.
All that testing that was done by the state of Connecticut, I mean, are they going to release the cycle thresholds?
It's a good question. I mean, right now, I'd just like to know how many tests and how much we paid for it. You know, the thresholds, I know that that's a big thing online. I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about it to be able to say if it's a real thing or not.
That's a huge factor that goes into whether it's a positive or negative test result.
I mean, at this point, it would be good to know. I don't know if it's more important in this story as to whether or not, you know, as to finding out how much money went to Sema4 from the governor. I mean, so, yes, I know the threshold thing is out there. You know what?
They know what cycle threshold they ran those tests.
Well, let's be honest. If you had a parent or a grandmother in a nursing home, I hope they're using a lot of cycle thresholds. I hope anybody that could potentially have anything to get passed on is staying the heck away from grandma. I mean, I understand the issues with false tests and that you had to quarantine and everything else.
With the general public, George, are they upping the cycle thresholds to generate higher positive results to keep executive rule for one person?
I mean, that's a question. I mean, that is a question. But at the same time, I'm not necessarily going to go after them hard for erring on the side of caution here, right? I mean, and so as I'm saying that, I get it. Now they're telling us that you don't even need to freaking sanitize.
I know.
How much money has your school district spent on sanitizing every single night and your restaurant every single day?
Exactly. All these restaurants, they got to go out and buy all this sanitizer and everything.
And everything else. I mean, I was involved in a company, DineSafe, you know, making calls, learning about it. My family was involved with their restaurant, which basically is to help consumer confidence.
Yeah.
It was an app that restaurants can use, or a website platform that restaurants could show what they're doing every day to keep the restaurants in compliance with all the rules, where this hand sanitizer is, you know, that you're 6 feet away, that you've got the plexiglass. I mean, all this stuff. Does any of that matter now? I mean, after a year of this, you know, the year of shutdowns that we can't go inside, you know, a restaurant, you know, it just doesn't make sense. In the meantime, grocery stores have been open the whole time, you know, and, you know, there's a lot of people running around and breathing, and it's all done through the air, 500 people under one building. Just a lot of questions with that, Kevin, right? I mean, I agree with the threshold. We should know, and how is it being used? But but if they gave me the answer of I'd rather err on the side of caution, you know what? I'm not going to fight with him on that either, that makes sense.
Why I called.
Yeah, I get it. So what else is on your mind?
So one of your previous callers, Mark, he was questioning, I guess, some of your statements on the 500,000.
Well, that wasn't me. He was saying that one of the callers said it was 500 million people died of diabetes, which wasn't accurate. The guy was saying that there was, you know, with these 500,000 COVID deaths, and I kind of corrected him saying, look, you know, it looks like there is about 20% excess deaths year over year. I know people have been saying that it's the same amount of deaths as any flu year, but that's just not the fact now that we have the numbers. It looks like it's about
CDC
a 15 to 20%.
The CDC publishes these numbers, and there's a link. I sent you a tweet on it. But basically, for 6% of the deaths, COVID-19 was the only cause mentioned on the death certificate. So only 6% of those deaths.
Yeah.
And so basically, the 94 other percent basically had one or more comorbidities. And on average, they've actually had 4%. Four additional conditions that caused the death,
or that could cause this. Yeah, I mean, and that's a point too. I mean, but let's say this. I mean, you could have diabetes. You could have heart, you know, different sort of heart disease. You could have breathing problems. And you know what? If you didn't get COVID, you probably weren't dying this year. I mean, maybe you were, But the idea is like, I'm not sure that you were. I mean, I know I have, because I had a family member who had literally the best round of golf of his life on a Sunday, got his first symptoms Sunday night, and by Wednesday, we weren't sure if he was making it through the day. I'm not over-exaggerating. I called the brother and said, check in with this guy. And so I know that, and that guy has some comorbidities, but you know what? And now he's healthy as a clam, and he's been vaccinated. And after he got the vaccine, he got really sick again because he had COVID. And so
the CDC breaks it down by age. They break it down by those comorbidities. Mm-hmm. You can see where the risks are.
Yeah,
and
which we know about.
And that's vast majority, it's low risk.
Yo, for most, I mean, anybody under the age of 60, it's low risk. Under the age of 50, for
right.
sure. In the state of Connecticut, you know, we're approaching 8,000 deaths. There's less than 200 for people under the age of 50. I mean, that's where we are right now. And there's a lot of people under 50 with comorbidities who fortunately are not dying from this. But there are people dying from this.
But what I'm saying is the economic restrictions and the liberties that they're forcing people to give up are not worth what this virus has done.
It's picking winners and losers.
Exactly.
The governor is picking winners and losers. You know, I use this example. You know, when the governor wasn't giving any money to the industries that he shut down, here's $5,000 restaurants. I mean, that won't pay half your electric bill in some of these restaurants. You know, in the meantime, he gives out $600+ million in state employee raises. And then in Massachusetts, the governor gave out $600 million to businesses to get them through the holidays and months until the PPP came. It's about
other
priorities.
Blue states, they delayed those employee raises.
Yes, because
other blue states delayed those.
Because when the governor couldn't bring in masks the whole first wave, maybe he should have used some of that money to do what he had to do. Maybe he should have given Stefanowski, you know, $100,000, and they could have teamed up. It would have been the best story in the country if Lamont, you know, gave some money to Stefanowski to pick up those masks and bring them back. They knew that it was happening. The governor knew that these masks were FDA approved and medically approved. They knew that they needed them in nursing homes and hospitals, and it still took 6 weeks for the governor to bring in a mask after Stefanowski picked it up himself as a private
because
citizen.
He had hiccups on the runway in China.
Yeah, allegedly,
you remember from one of the press.
Allegedly,
no, was,
but then
that's what he
I know that's what he said.
In one of the
but
press conferences.
But then when they actually got him in and they were asked, you know, what about these runway issues? Both Gabal and Lamont go, oh, I don't know. We didn't say that. We had no issues.
Right.
You know, we got Chinese construction bank guy and Ray Dalio and this guy and that guy.
Yeah.
You know, we made it happen. We got ahead of the line. They
a lot
told
of middlemen.
Us.
A lot of middlemen.
It's nuts, Kevin. Hey, I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be back after this. Welcome back. WTIC News Talk 1080. George Colley, guest hosting here. Got Matty Saroy's producing. So we've had a bunch of stuff we've talked about, a bunch of stuff I didn't get to today. Going to have to get to that tomorrow. I'm going to get this story posted online, hopefully by the end of the day, too, if any of you want to share it out there. It'll be under the Will Marotti page and podcast here for the show. Like I said, haven't heard from anybody from the governor's office. Maybe it's because I didn't play Adele today. That could be it. Maybe that's what it, you know, that didn't seem to work. But at least somebody... Someone is willing to defend the governor for $30 million over 2.5 fiscal years going to a company his wife's venture capital firm is one of the original investors in. Paul from Plymouth.
Please, I don't need an introduction. In one regard, we had antique shows here. We had one last summer in Madison, Connecticut, outside. I finally did my thing. We had flea markets open in May. Even the elephant's trunk, the E.T. flea, was open August. In Massachusetts, they will not let the Brimfield antique shows go on. So in that regard, I give the governor credit. However, we need events to get up and running. We need more to be done. Let's think positive. And by the way, when I was a political science student, Dr. Yaloff over at the campus at Storrs, he was my favorite professor. And this is called when they poll political leanings, intersectionality of the salient political socioeconomic salient issues, right? You can term it whatever you want, but the polling on whether you think the 2020 election was stolen is coming out on the Republican side about two-thirds.
Here's what we're doing, Paul. We're not talking about that at all today. So what do you think about the governor? Can you defend the governor on the semaphore stuff?
There needs to be more accountability all the way around. And as far as the governor shutdown, what he has done, A.G. Tong has sided with him. So it belongs in the wheelhouse of the attorney general. And I know you're kind of buddies with him, but he was out in an hour interview program talking about it's a long public service announcement on student loans and vaccines, but nothing on the power grab by the governor.
You know, I see a New York attorney general certainly being unafraid to go after the governor. I think that we may eventually get to that point. I mean, it may take the New York attorney general putting the indictments on.
Defend and not defend. I mean, we have to be positive going forward. And that caller that was very critical of you, thank you. You're growing a pair, Georgie.
It's not just hanging up on you, Paul. I could do it with others. I have a feeling you call back.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thanks.
Hey, thank you for the call, Paul. I appreciate it. All right. So what did we learn today? Did we learn anything new today? I'm not sure if we did. I'm not sure if we didn't. But I do know that we have some more questions. Questions that may or may not get answered today or tomorrow or next week or next month. But guess what? They're not going away. They're not going away until we get the answers. This isn't a Democrat or Republican thing. If Ron DeSantis was giving no-bid contracts to companies connected to his wife and COO, that would be a news story in Connecticut. It would probably be a national news story. I believe that what's happening here in Connecticut is a story in Connecticut. I believe it is a national news story. And I believe there need to be people from the governor's administration, more than one, more than just him. It's not his wife's fault. It's not OHCFT, her venture capital firm's fault. It's not. It's kind of like I don't go after the unions when they're given everything they ask for here in the state, because their job is to ask for everything. It's those who give it. So what we're looking at here is Governor Ned Lamont. Period. He's the one who needs to answer these questions. He's the one who should have the pressure put on him. Because OHCFT has every right to make as much money as they possibly can. I believe that his wife is an absolute boss lady when it comes to healthcare technology. I hope they do great. But not with our taxpayer funds. And it's time to answer some questions. Thank you all for tuning in. Maddie Sirois, thank you for doing a great job again. We'll talk to you all tomorrow.